Are you logging on to MeetingView, okay?
Yes, are you?
Okay. Yeah, I can get to the entry screen, but no further at the moment. I was on earlier. Strange.
Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. I would just like to advise everyone that the call today is being recorded. Should you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
Thank you very much.
I'll find out from the coordinator about that for you.
Okay, if you could, it may just be my end, but
yes,
that will just help with names and things if we can have that.
Is there an online meeting facility available for all of us?
No, I think it's just for conference leaders. It basically lists the names of who's on, which makes the moderation a bit easier.
I thought you might have set up something so we could do slides, but
no, we're not that nice, really.
No problem.
Excuse me, Nick Aston Hartstein.
Hi, Nick.
Hello. Ron Anderson also joined the call. Ron Anderson joined the call.
Hello, Ron. You're very welcome.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning.
That depends, Ron. What part of the world are you in?
Today is Bangkok.
Uh-oh.
Just got out of Bangkok this afternoon and Beijing on Wednesday.
It's getting a tad late there, isn't it?
It is a tad late, my friend. It's about 12:35. But it's not as bad as the boys in Australia, let's put it that way.
Yes, apparently when we designed ICANN, we should have also thought about time zone manipulation, huh, Ron?
Well, now, you know, when I'm on the road, Maryland, 24/7, that's how it goes. You know? Nobody seems to know where I am, so people phone me night and day.
I think there are probably other people on this call who are over-identifying with you.
Yeah, I can appreciate it.
Okay.
We can start holding all our meetings in Diego Garcia facial. That covered most people.
That's a splendid idea. I think we'll make a start. I'm going to do a roll call in a second, just so that we all know who's on the line and where they're from. Glenn, are you listening?
Yes, I am, Philip.
Excellent. Could you do the roll call for me? I think the connectivity problem is my end, so I'm just doing a little restart.
All right.
You do the roll call. As your name's announced, perhaps you can just say which constituents you have any affiliation to.
Marilyn Cade, Business Constituency. Philip Shepherd, Business Constituency. Preeti Pipilani,
Business Constituency with AT&T.
George Kirikos, Business Constituency. Simon Basto from the LSE. Denise Michel, the Vice President of Policy for ICANN. Alistair Dixon, Business Constituency. Caroline Chicoin, IPC. Garrett Cern.
With EDUCAUSE, the Registrar and Registry Constituencies.
Thank you. Ken Stubbs, Registry Constituency. Michael Palage.
I got three of them there, Glenn. I participate in an individual capacity with my consulting company in the business constituency. I am a non-voting member, I think, class 3 within the IP constituency, and then I am an alternate voting representative for .coop in the registry constituency.
Thank you, Michael. Steve Del Bianco, business constituency. Philip Corwin, business constituency, I think.
Yes, that's correct.
Patrick Dunleavy, London School of Economics. John Nevitt, Registrar Constituency. Ron Andrews, Business Constituency. And Nick Ashton Hart, Business Constituency.
Actually,
have I left out anybody?
Actually, with at large.
Oh, sorry. You were at large. Thank you, Nick. Yes. Have I left out anybody?
Yes, this is Jim Baskin, the business constituency.
Thank you, Jim.
Glenn, this is Bruce Beckwith, also with the at-large.
Welcome, Bruce. Thank you.
Okay, Glenn, thanks so much. That seems to be it. Patrick, then, if you'll kick off just talking us through those first five slides of your presentation and anything else you want to add as introductory remarks. Just in terms of timing, I have a hard stop in 1.5 hours time. If there's still a whole queue of questions, I'm happy to hand over moderation to somebody else there. And Patrick, what's your own timing on this?
Well, I'm fine. That's fine by me.
Okay. Then we'll see how it goes by then. So if you'll kick off, please.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to concentrate on the first few slides in response to Philip's suggestion.
Patrick, it is Marilyn. Sorry, might I just suggest there probably are people on the call who don't have your slides?
Right.
Just an FYI.
Marilyn, it's George here. If people go to gnso.icann.org and then click on mailing lists and then go to the council list, the October 2nd posting has the PowerPoint slides as well as links to the original documents if people are there.
Easier than that, George, if you go to the gnso.icann.org and you click at the top on the red master calendar, and you go to the 3rd of October, you will find the presentation there.
Great. So, there we are. We have two links, and Patrick, off you go, please.
Right. Well, you guys are all linked up, and mine is just... can you just say master calendar? What was that last thing, Jim?
Oh, yeah. October 3rd.
Master calendar.
Yeah.
And then go to October.
Right.
And then you'll see on the 3rd of October.
So we're in a shower. This is a bowling place. And the video store. We're not very slow at all. Yeah.
That sounds like Denise.
Denise, you've just come off mute, I think.
I bowl.
Okay. Right. I'm on now. So thanks very much for that. So what I'd like to do is just sort of mention our terms of reference, the way we did things, the brief that we had, and the view that we've taken of what GNSO has achieved so far, and then just the sort of four principles. So if we go to sort of slide three of the presentation, the terms of reference that we had cover these four main themes: representativeness, openness and transparency, effectiveness, and regularity and compliance. We don't say very much about regularity and compliance, although there are one or two issues about ICANN bylaws and, you know, timings and so forth, and basically our recommendations there are directed towards sort of bringing the two into sync with reality so that the bylaws don't set down timings that can't be achieved. So most of the focus is on the representativeness of the GNSO Council and especially the constituencies, the openness and transparency, how easy it is for people to find out what GNSO Council is doing and how it's operating, and effectiveness. So we use these various tools. It's not possible when you're doing this kind of work to point to, you know, any one method that will, on its own, legitimate certain strong recommendations. So what we've done is we talked to a very wide range of people. We had an online survey and consultation. We went to the Wellington meeting and sat in on a number of meetings and talked to people there. And we've done a great deal of work within the GNSO and ICANN information to try and put together and add up their activities. So there's a lot of effort in our work to not rely on any one piece of information or any one view, but to try and triangulate a lot of different pieces of information and to try and get to recommendations and, well, an analysis and also recommendations that come from that that reflect lots of different points of view. We just always like to say that this is an independent piece of research, which is just part of our brief. Obviously, we've listened to everybody that we've talked to very carefully. So it does, of course, respond to what people say in the ICANN and GNSO communities, but it's not been influenced by the ICANN staff or board, as some people have said on the web. Moving on to slide four, obviously GNSO has put in a fantastic amount of work, and we quantified out at, you know, around 35,000 hours, and the work is, of course, all unpaid, and that means that all of you are contributing very heavily to the success of ICANN and GNSO. And obviously, GNSO has, you know, attracted committed participation from a large number of people. And I think, you know, this phone call is one example of that. There aren't many organizations who will get this many people together for a 1.5-hour phone call on a Friday night. So, you know, there's we want to put up front that we recognize there's been a tremendous amount of work done, a tremendous amount of development in GNSO's work and so forth. So, although we're making suggestions for changes, we'd like to stress that they're not in any way criticisms of GNSO or of ICANN. They are just things that have emerged out of the listening to the very wide range of views that we've undertaken. So the four principles which underlie most of the, well, all of the recommendations that we make and most of the analysis are that, you know, any changes that might be made to GNSO Council and its constituencies operations should enhance the representativeness of the whole process. And I think that, you know, some concerns were voiced to us about the difficulties of attracting participation at the moment and the relatively restricted range of participation. So although we have a lot of committed participation, it's not necessarily as broad as it might be. And it's not necessarily arranged in a way that people sort of currently outside GNSO feel that they could easily get involved if they wanted to. Similarly, GNSO is really remarkably invisible to the wider internet community. ICANN is terrifically visible, as we document in the report, and much discussed. But, you know, only a tiny fraction of the ICANN discussions recognize or incorporate GNSO. And then within the GNSO constituencies, you know, they are even less visible than GNSO itself. So one of the main suggestions in the report is that it doesn't really make sense to have a sort of membership structure that's based around the least visible of the three tiers of organizations. And that, you know, moving to a structure where people can become members of ICANN, which is very visible, and then can also be assigned to, given their interest, to GNSO and then choose one of the constituencies within that. And you need probably a simpler structure of constituencies that would really help in making things more visible and more transparent and more representative, because we think that would expand participation. The website needs to be cleaned up and various sort of other smaller changes need to be made to improve documentation and also to give a somewhat more predictability, really, in what GNSO Council workload is. So we're suggesting a sort of two-year plan in which the first year is pretty firm and the second year is a bit less firm. The third principle is that do you think that GNSO structures at the moment are rather kind of grounded in the way things used to be a few years back, and they've not really been, you know, as flexible and adaptable as they perhaps need to be for the internet, because change does happen very, very quickly on the internet, and so you really need to make sure that the constituency structures are set up in a way that doesn't exclude people, doesn't have a time-limited relevance, is flexible, allows people to, you know, intervene, get involved easily, and that's really the key underpinning for the suggestion that the number of constituencies needs to be reduced from 6 to 3, basically one for business, one for the registration interests, and one for civil society. And there needs to be a bit of a push to make sure that there's more outreach, and I can help these constituencies and, relate to to their broader sort of clientele. And finally, there's a sort of cluster of changes that are suggested that arise out of, you know, what was put to us, a lot of different views were put to us about the way in which the GNSO Council operates under the current weighted voting and under the current 66% consensus, 67% consensus policy. And our feeling was that when you looked at what different people were saying and why they were saying it and how they said it, it was a little bit clear that the consensus level was a little bit low, and people did have kind of rather perverse incentives to try and sort of just bounce things very marginally over the consensus level, and that there perhaps, you know, that was an impediment to the GNSO Council developing more, you know, really strong consensus policies. And so we're suggesting a slight increase in the level of consensus. We're suggesting the removal of weighted voting by arranging the votes of the new constituencies so that different interests, the representation interests, the business interests, and would have if they acted as a bloc, if all their representatives were acting as a bloc, they would have a veto. And the civil society plus nominating committee would also be able to veto, so that there would really be, you know, the only way you'd be able to get things done would be to reach much stronger, genuine consensus positions. And we actually think, although it sounds a little bit, you know, counterintuitive to say you get more consensus by raising the bar, it's a very small raise of the bar, but the reconfiguration, we think, would help GNSO Council to reach, you know, genuinely consensus on near unanimous position. But we think that, you know, people, when they know they have to compromise, will make compromises. When they think they might be able to get away without making compromises, they may tend to stick on positions and maximize their gains. So that's the sort of the basic way in which we've sought to reconcile and pull together the differing views. And we hope that, of course, the specific changes that are suggested will need to be, you know, very, very fully and extensively discussed by GNSO, by the constituencies, by the board and GNSO together. You know, it's not possible for us to go through all the possible permutations of, you know, how many seats might this constituency have and how many people might there be in the council as a whole. There's a lot of different permutations. In fact, there's an infinite number of permutations. But what's important really is to try in a, you know, a genuine way to make sure that any changes that are suggested and discussed and taken forward do respond to these sort of key principles, which we hope would attract, you know, near unanimous agreement. And that's really where I'd like to stop and go to questions, if that's okay.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Patrick. What I'll do is try and group the questions according to the four principles, not necessarily in numerical order, because I think some may be more interesting to debate than others, but certainly kicking off with principle one, which concerns the enhancement of representativeness, and covers recommendations 1 to 6, which broadly cover the concepts like transparency, draft support, participation rates, and the nature of where participation should take place. So let me take a cue of people who have some questions concerning those areas to do with principle one.
I'd hop into queue there, Philip. This is Mike Pelage.
Okay, if you could always say your name first, that would help me very much, Mike. Thank you. Who else? Anybody else yet on principle one? Good, that makes it easy. Mike, off you go.
All right, thank you, Philip. First, I would like to thank the LLC for a very comprehensive report, and I actually do agree with most of the recommendations. Regarding recommendations 1 through 6, I agree with the first recommendation, as well as the second. The one, recommendation number 3, and that deals with the need for greater coherence and standardization across constituency operations, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just, from a business standpoint, I think there needs to be, if you will, a better cost-benefit analysis as to the amount of money that would need to go to help each constituency operate effectively. And I guess my question to the LSC staff is, did they look at the operations within each constituency? Because there are some that actually do provide a secretariat-like service. And in fact, the registrars actually this year, I believe, are considering going that way as well. And it was interesting to look at the numbers based upon my discussion to what the proper, if you will, level of support may be needed. So that's, if you will, my question or comment in connection with number 3. Recommendation 4, no problems. 5. With regard to number 6, and this has to do with direct stakeholder participation, my concern here, I think, and this was raised by the LSC during their last teleconference, and it went to the issue of how membership, if someone was to come forward and sign up for ICANN membership, they would then be, I think, allocated to a particular group or constituency. I use the term pigeonholed. As discussed at the top of this call, I participate within many constituencies within the GNSO, and I, in fact, also work with some CCTLD operators as well. So from that standpoint, I would have significant reservations about potentially being told I only could participate here or there. This is particularly in light of the evolution and reform process, where this was extensively debated within the community, and it was, in fact, at that time rejected. So I guess those would be my comments and questions in regard to the, if you will, first bundle of recommendations.
Okay, response, Patrick.
Oh, Philip, are you going to take a cue on these topics, or are you just going to go...
Yes, I had asked a cue earlier. I only had Mike in it. Are you saying you'd like to join?
Actually, I would like to join. It's Maryland.
Okay. That's anybody else
for
the queue?
Philip, can I join? It's Alistair Dixon here.
Alistair, indeed. Anybody else? Okay. Well, if you could try and keep questions succinct as we're grouping them, that would help Patrick in his responses. Marilyn, off you go.
Two categories. I have two kinds of questions, I think, or maybe two categories. One is questions for you about the present situation related to turning ICANN, per se, into a membership organization, since that was examined as a legal issue at the time that we found at ICANN and was rejected as a possibility due to liability issues and other problems in the legal environment in which it is presently incorporated. So I wanted maybe, Patrick, for you to talk a little bit more about your concept of membership, realizing that the actuality of a membership organization is not in any way a legal practicality at this time. But I thought you perhaps had a concept more in mind you might explain. And my second tranche of questions I'll save because I think it comes later in the discussion about that we'll probably get into.
Okay, thank you very much. Alistair.
Thanks, Philip. My question, I have just a really a specific question in relation to question to recommendation 5. And I mean, I agree with the principle of promoting active participation that's proportional to the global distribution, the relevant indicators. I'm just like to understand how it's suggested this might be achieved, particularly with the sort of the constituency groups that are suggested. So I'd just like to understand what suggestions LSE has for achieving that wider sort of global representation.
Okay, thanks very much. I think that's probably enough for going on with. Patrick, off again.
Okay, well, maybe I could start with Michael's point about recommendation 6 and Marilyn's point about turning ICANN into a membership organization. We are not suggesting that ICANN should become a membership organization, and indeed we couldn't make any such suggestion because that would have been, you know, way beyond our brief. We didn't look at ICANN as a whole. So we only looked in a very focused way at GNSO. What we're suggesting is that insofar as there is a membership basis for GNSO activities that's currently rooted in the constituencies and goes up from the constituencies to GNSO to ICANN, that that doesn't make any kind of sense because the constituencies are very invisible. ICANN is GNSO is not very visible, and ICANN is much more visible. So we're suggesting that the existing membership function, without in any way implying that ICANN should become a membership organization, but that it would be better arranged and organized by allowing people to, you know, be a member of ICANN as a whole, and then to opt into the relevant parts of ICANN in order to do the bottom-up stakeholder participation bit. So that's
just a clarification there. Do you see it necessary, as Mike Pillard was suggesting, that everybody participating directly in ICANN would opt into one of the constituencies or other groups as it may be, or that would simply be an option for those who wanted to participate more deeply in the policy aspect?
Well, I certainly think that, you know, if people were able to sort of join as a member of ICANN, whether the membership is the, you know, is a controlling part of ICANN or not is an entirely other thing, but they would be able to then, if they wished, to be allocated to one or more of the support organizations, and then they would be able to join one of the constituencies within the GNSO. That's what we're suggesting. We're suggesting that they shouldn't be able to join multiple constituencies within the GNSO. But Michael does raise a very good point about could you, if you were taking out this membership with ICANN, could you join GNSO and CCNSO and so on at the same time? And I don't see, you know, I myself don't see a reason why not in both organizations, and many actors will have interests that, you know, would lead them into interactions with both supporting organizations. I'd just like to stress that we've only looked at GNSO, so we haven't looked at CCNSO at all either. So I hope that's sort of clear. What we're suggesting is that insofar as there are currently membership roles and activities which are organized through constituencies within GNSO, a more sensible and likely a way that would attract, you know, wider participation would be to organize this through people joining the most visible body, ICANN, and then being able to come into GNSO and into other sporting organizations if they're interested in other sporting organizations, and within GNSO join one constituency but not multiple constituencies. That's the suggestion.
I guess, Philip, my follow-up question is, what is the logic?
Yeah, Mike, could you just hold on the follow-up and let,
sure.
let Patrick run through the point he had, and then we'll come back to that.
Thanks. Sure.
Michael's second question was about, you know, the activities of the constituencies. And I think we did find it quite costly in information cost terms to find out how the constituencies were set up and organized. And we did feel that there would be scope, especially if the number of constituencies was reduced, to have constituencies that operated in a somewhat more standardized way. Of course, they would still control fully their own constitutions and so on, but they would, we hope, try to achieve a kind of a greater degree of commonality within the way they operated, so that it would be easier for people to understand how they were developing their positions and inputting into GNSO affairs. And we felt that the best way in which ICANN would be able to help bring this about would be to offer, you know, somewhat more support to constituencies, so as to achieve a more consistent a role. And I think if the constituencies attracted wider memberships, as we would expect under the suggestions that we've made, there would need to be, you know, ICANN support for GNSO constituencies to help them to deal with a wider range of members. On Alistair's point, finally, about recommendation 5, it is a tricky thing to, you know, to establish what would count as a successful ICANN representation, because, of course, GNSO representation, because GNSO is seeking to represent the views of people who have interest and involvement in domain name issues. And it's not, you know, easy to identify independently of their sort of joining GNSO constituencies already who is in fact interested in these issues. And so we did a thorough job as we felt able to do within the limits of the available GNSO and ICANN information about who is involved in the organization in documenting that. And we don't reach any sort of strong conclusion on that, except to say that, you know, there are some variations between constituencies and there are some that seem to be sort of, you know, doing better than others in attracting participation with the relevant groups. But you know, what we're worried about is that many of the people who spoke to us in interviews did impugn either the sort of representativeness of constituencies that they tended to disagree with, or indeed the representativeness of the whole GNSO process. And there was a relatively widespread feeling that you know, that representation needed to be broadened and needed to be better balanced.
Okay, thank you very much. Mike, I need you to follow up. Marilyn, I'm assuming you have follow-ups as well.
I do, yeah.
Thank you, Phil. And let me just say that I fully agree with the LSC with regards to their need to increase the representativeness of the GNSO process as well as document it. That's not in question, and I fully agree with those two broad points. I guess my question, again, this goes back to the one constituency limit. This was something that I heard first during the last consultation, and I guess my question is, I can't find it in any of the recommendations. So I guess, you know, that's my first question is, can the LSE point to one of the 24 recommendations and say this is where the one limit constituency rule has been proposed? And I guess the second question, or more of a statement, is let's just look at the business constituency, for example, in which I participate. Ron Andrew, who's on this call on behalf of RNA, his consulting company, or his company, also is the president of a registry. We have CETA, which is a member of the business constituency, which is also the sponsoring organization for the .ARO TLD. We have Nokia, who is a member of the business constituency, which is also one of the shareholders of .mobi. We have the representatives of .berlin, who hope to one day become a TLD registry, participate. We have AOL Time Warner, which not only is a member of the business constituency, also one of the world's largest ISPs, but is also an ICANN accredited registrar. The reason I sort of just give this representative list, raise this, is this was the discussion that was so well argued back in the evolution and reform process that I just don't see how the LSC and their recommendations for making this one constituency limit, I don't see how they've, if you will, refuted what was discussed then, and I can't find it in the specific recommendation. So I guess those are my two follow-up points.
Philip, may I just, as Ron Andrew speaking, may I just make a comment on that, seeing as how I was brought into that conversation at the top?
Yes, Ron, why didn't you do that?
Just very short. I wanted to draw the distinction, Michael and for others on the call, that RNA Partners is my holding company, and the company that is an active company working and doing things with regard to the Internet. I am the president of that company, managing director of that company, to be clear, and so for that reason, I have maintained my position within the BC as a business constituency member. You have never seen me, and you never will see me, at a registry meeting. In fact, that's the domain of our CEO to determine who is that, and that person is Charian Mathai. So Charian is the registry representative for Trilliant Corporation, not Ron Andruff.
I understand that, Ron, but you are being paid by Trilliant.
Let's not have a dialogue on that, Mike.
Sure, Chair, I'd like to join HQ.
Caroline.
Marilyn, let me take your follow-up, and then we may pursue this other little thing in a moment. Was that Caroline also asking for airtime?
Yeah, a separate number two.
George here, too. I'd like to join the queue.
Okay, fine. Marilyn, your follow-up.
So I'm desperately looking for my notes for myself. Hold on here. I think it's more of a clarification, Patrick. One of the things that I noticed in the excellent appendix and the charts that you provided, which were useful in providing visual backup to the information you provided, what I didn't really fully understand and might ask you to comment on is you interviewed and you may want to hold this till later, but you interviewed an extremely large percentage of people who are not involved in ICANN, and I assume that you did that because you were looking for how visible is the GNSO, how well marketed, so to speak, is the information about how to participate, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of a two-part question. If that was the case, is there information available to us about the methodology and the questions that you used in interviewing people who aren't part of ICANN? We can take that offline. I'm just interested in part of the methodology, but I don't want to bog this call down.
Okay, Mary. Let me just sort of put that on hold for a second in terms of the line we're pursuing. That was perhaps a separate subject rather than following up on what you won before.
Sure.
Caroline and George, were your questions related to the...
Recommendation number two?
About multiple representation.
No, it was regarding recommendation number two.
Recommendation two. Okay, I'll come back to that then. And George, your point?
Oh, yeah. It's a broader question.
Could you, rather than the question.
It relates to Mike's point and Ron's discussion too.
Okay, then,
if the LSC has any recommendations on how other organizations handle these conflicts of interest when members are allowed in multiple constituencies, because there's always going to be issues of related companies. For example, one might join the business constituency or the new business super constituency as a corporation, but then also be in the civil society as an individual entity. And so there's always this issue of relatedness and being members of related companies. And so I was wondering how the LSC sees those conflicts of interest that are naturally going to arise handled in other organizations that perhaps ICANN and the GNSO can learn from.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Pat, over to you.
Great. Yes, I mean, I think this is a really interesting set of issues, and it kind of shows the strength of the old adage that there's nothing however complex, but when you look at it in more detail, you can't see that it's more complex. So I think it's, you know, it's like taking a microscope to a structure. Of course, when you look closer, you'll need to provide more detail. I think the basic point that we would make is that ICANN has a philosophy of bottom-up stakeholder involvement, and as I think Ron Anders' comment to Michael suggests, there are existing ways in which companies, particularly that have different interests, but also, you know, people within companies that have different interests can participate in wearing different hats. And so we would assume that I mean, at the moment, it's not really a massive problem of GNSO that people are joining, signing up large numbers of people, let's say business people signing up large numbers of people in the civil society area. But we would assume that where a company has, registration and business interests, that they would have a Chinese wall system in place for managing that, and that they would have different people representing the different views. Obviously, you know, you would perhaps want to think about conflicts of interest if you saw, for example, large corporations were joining up hundreds of employees in the civil society thing and then lobbying for corporate things there, then that would be a problem. But that's not a problem that exists at the moment. The main problem is to get, you know, as many people as possible involved with and commenting on and discussing and interacting with GNSO, and that's what the changes and suggestions that we've made are designed to enhance, really.
Okay.
So, you know, you'd need to think about that possibly in the future and possibly to think about having rules if you saw problems arising, but it's not an immediate issue is my suggestion.
Yeah. No, certainly I think historically in the BC it's been the case indeed that there has been separate people representation. Ron's example I think was a very good one, and I think that the BC has always like judged its members by the nature of their participation in terms of its appropriateness. Anyway, let's move on to a question that Caroline had and a recommendation too.
Yeah, I just was curious in terms of the motivation, because when I read it, you know, it would require to show how many members have participated in developing the positions, and, you know, like everything, there's quantitative and qualitative measures,
yeah.
And also there's some organizations that some people belong, but they just never actively participate, even though they're, you know, included in all the emails. Some of them, just because of time constraints, given a lot of the deadlines that ICANN imposes, oftentimes will rely kind of on the, you know, for lack of a better term, bigger players that have the resources to kind of at least draft up something. And so I'm just curious as to what, you know, it concerns me when it says show how many members, which to me implies, quantity as opposed to quality.
Okay, Patrick?
Yeah, so this recommendation comes out of a good deal of sort of impugning of constituency position taking that was done by, you know, a wide range of people. As I mentioned, some people were impugning the basis for views taken by a constituency that they felt was opposed to them. Some people, including some people who haven't joined GNSA constituencies, and some people in sort of ICANN more broadly beyond GNSO have doubts about the number of actual participants who have been involved in the production of constituency positions. And I think that the point is here that this is not in any way a recommendation that's motivated by a sort of critical thing about how things have been, but in order for GNSO to carry weight within ICANN more generally, it's very important that people should be able to relatively easily establish, the process that went on leading to the articulation of constituency positions and then how that fed through into the council. And I think the current sort of difficulties and uncertainties produces a lot of possibly urban myths, if you like, about how slender the basis for some position taking has been. And so the recommendation is really just designed to help clarify things and to create incentives, obviously, for constituencies to have the broadest possible input and commentary. And some of the other things that we are suggesting, including, having a plan of GNSO Council issues, getting the timings for PDPs right and not sort of having, bylaw timings that you're not observing. I think all of those are designed and having more outreach activities by constituencies. So we hope that all of that would mean that it's easier for constituencies to get a broader range of members to be involved, and it's easier for them to explain the basis of the participation. It would be great if you could go beyond that, as Caroline suggests, and show the quality of participation. The only reason we focus on the number of people involved is that it's a rudimentary, but it's relatively easy to sort of establish, whereas thinking about quality of discussions and so forth and deliberation.
Well, I like your idea about process, though, versus quantity. In other words, documenting the process, because then
yeah.
It's very clear whether something was just a sham or a true, consensus of the constituency.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is not a problem that's unique by any way to ICANN. I wonder if you have learnings elsewhere. I mean, I, my normal day job working within the European Union, see precisely the same sort of thing happening in online consultations that the European Commission may do about policy options, whereby, there is one entry made on there, perhaps on behalf of UNICE, representing all the employers' federations in the 25 countries of the EU. There may be one contribution from the multinational company Nestle, and there may be one contribution from Paul Schmidt, who runs a bakery in Hamburg. And often these are counted together numerically in terms of the contributions received, let alone the analysis of them. And it is difficult, isn't it, to distinguish between a voice that is speaking in a more representative role as an association would, or indeed on behalf of a company with that are very broad interests, but there's the smaller ones. I mean, do you have experience from other organizational structures you looked at that help in this respect?
Well, of course, I think if you had, well-organized constituency secretariats, and also relatively larger constituencies, which is what we're suggesting in terms of having fewer constituencies, then I'm sure that there would be a capability for the secretariats there to try to give the best overall picture of the quality of their participation as well. But I think what most governments do around the world is actually they do basically just count participants as a sort of a rudimentary check on how many people are involved, and I think that that's really all we're suggesting is a minimal process of constituencies being clear to the other constituencies, to the council, and ultimately, of course, the ICANN board, how wide the participation has been. If they could also develop indicators of the quality of participants and of the quality of deliberations, that's also, of course, very helpful. Mm-hmm. But I think at the end of the day, very often the ICANN board is sitting with a submission from GNSO Council, but they also have very often other voices, some of whom are talking to board members directly, some of whom are talking through the Government Advisory Committee. The board is often in a position of trying to balance out what it thinks about these differing inputs, and I think anything that makes more clear what the basis for the GNSO input is going to be helpful for enhancing the influence of GNSO.
Oh. Okay, let's, if we may, looking at the clock, leap to principle 4, which I think has some of the media recommendations. This is in terms of the enhanced ability to reach consensus, contains recommendation 19 in terms of reorganization of constituencies into three, talks about making council smaller, abolishing the weighted voting system, raising the threshold for consensus to 75%, and indeed altering also the way that council votes directors to the board. Who has questions on any of those issues?
Philip
Baskin, I'd like to. One
of the
scientists again. Baskin. Who else?
Gal Bianco, Philip.
Steve Del Bianco, who else?
Alistair Dixon, Philip.
Alistair, thank you, who else?
And Marilyn at some point.
And Marilyn, who else?
Blake.
Okay, who else?
George Frikos would like to join too.
George, who else?
And Seth, too, Philip.
That's again, Ken, was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Right, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Could I ask you to ask very succinct questions without too much background, and then we'll try and group those and see if Patrick can handle those. Off you go, Jim.
Okay, thanks. My question relates to the proposal for the 75% figure for census, and how what would happen in the case where if the ICANN board is supposed to take input from the GNSO as the lead constituency or the lead support organization on domain name issues, if the GNSO cannot come to a consensus on something because they can't reach 75%, what is the board to do?
Okay. Steve.
My question would be that the benchmarking that was done by LSC may have revealed how other organizations, whether they actually require a consensus at all in lieu of a simple majority, and what did your benchmarking show with respect to the percentage level that other organizations used to call it a consensus?
Okay, thank you. Alistair?
My question relates to the proposal to effectively collapse several constituencies into one and how the LSE would suggest that the different interests within those basically effectively broader constituencies are reflected in terms of GNSO council representation.
Okay, Marin.
My question is about the rationale that suggested that fewer councillors will make more informed decisions.
Thank you. Michael?
Thank you, Phil. I guess my question is more along the lines of, did the LSE consider abolishing voting in total? Because when you look at most of the animosity that goes on or some of the discussions, it's, I want more votes, I want more votes, who has more power? You talk about, well, you only could participate in one constituency because you might be trying to stack the deck. If you look at the council, it is not meant to be a legislative body. It is meant to be a body that is supposed to help the consensus development process. And if you were to just remove voting and just allow the different super constituencies, as you've documented them, to sign off and say, yes, this is representative of the viewpoints in our constituency, and then forward it to the board, because I think that is something that I think really does need to be put on the table and looked at, just doing away with voting, except in the instances of putting someone on the board and, if you will, selecting a chair. But I think this is something that needs to be discussed, because one of the earlier comments said, what happens if the GNSO can't decide on a consensus position? What will the board do? Well, as someone who served on the board, the fiduciary duty that the board director has is to act in the best interest of the corporation, and that's what a director has to do. So I think if the GNSO really wants to, if you will, function as it's envisioned in the ICANN bylaws as being someone to help build consensus, all voting does is create a scenario where
Michael, your question is good. You're giving background now.
Let's get to the question.
Well, the question is, did the LSE consider doing away with voting?
Okay, then keep it there. George.
Hi, I was wondering if the LSE had recommendations on how best to handle cross-constituency interactions, whether they, for example, on policy matters, should be done very early in the process, or whether it should be done at the council level. What are some best practices that the LSE could recommend to encourage consensus building?
Yeah, that's it. Ken.
Yeah, and down the number of constituencies from 6 to 3 may make some sense, but how would you deal with the how do you deal with the idea that the registries and registrars have sufficient commonality of interest to form a single constituency? That currently is not at all supported by theory or practice.
So the question was the commonality. Was that the word you used, Ken? You're fading a little.
Well, yeah, the stars sufficient commonality is not at all supported in practice or even theory.
Okay. So Patrick, if you can make a stab at those. I think we had, just to run through this again, question on 75%, on benchmarking, on interest versus representation. Is less more in terms of voting numbers on council, why vote at all on policy, how you'll manage cross-constituency interactions, and the specific about the, is there sufficient commonality between the two supply sides, if you like, on the registries and the registrars?
Okay, good. Well, in fact, I think a lot of these questions do, you know, sort of link together, and so about the benchmarking of other organizations, about the consensus, we were very struck that compared with other bodies of a similar kind, GNSO does take an awful lot of votes, and some of the comments, I think, that that were made to us did say that GNSO Council had become sort of overly like a legislative body, and I think the other bodies don't use a simple majority system. I mean, the normal way of doing the kind of technical policy making that GNSO Council is concerned with is really
to strike a balance somewhere between a kind of you know, two-thirds, 75% level and complete unanimity, so that most bodies doing this kind of work will tend to try and reach unanimity first. Not maybe complete unanimity, but unanimity of all sort of right-thinking people. You may have an odd person who is taking a very idiosyncratic or very self-interested position, and so the, you know, the unanimity might come down from that. So that would be more the kind of the kind of thing that you'd expect in most bodies, and other people in similar bodies told us that they very rarely took votes, and it's common, you know, as we've mentioned in other calls, for example, the European Council has either unanimous voting or qualified majority voting, and normally, even under qualified majority voting, although the level is 72%, the level of agreement with the decisions is usually much more like 90-95%. It's relatively rare even for people to dissent. So I think what we're suggesting are measures that we hope would help move the council more towards this style of operating. Now, the very first question from Jim did raise an interesting point. What is the implication in terms of the council if the council can't reach a decision? When we made our suggestions, we did do various kind of technical analyses, which we haven't included in the appendices because they're sort of theoretical rather than practical. But raising the you know, the decision rule from 67% to 75% does have a small impact on what's called the likelihood of decision score. That's a particular technical method we have for estimating how likely it is under various kind of assumptions that the organization will reach a decision. So, you know, if you raise the threshold of voting, you will slightly, but not very very appreciably, you will very slightly increase the chance that GNSO Council would not be able to reach a decision. But it's far too small an effect to you know, that we would expect to see anything result in practice. And what's really overwhelmingly important is the quality of deliberation that's going on in the body, and the sort of spirit within which people are participating, and that will swamp any sort of technical effect of increasing the threshold. And that's really what our response is to Naren's question. We think that the current body is quite a large body, and moving it down in size to 16 people would tend to have positive effects on the quality of deliberation and the ability of people to work with each other. You know, there's quite a lot of technical and other reasons why that effect would operate. I think two of the questions related to reducing the number of constituencies and then the need for there to be some balancing out of different interests within the so-called super constituencies or slightly larger constituencies that we're suggesting. I mean, I do think it's kind of important for GNSO Council that, so far as possible, the number of positions and the types of positions that are being taken will reflect the different interests. We don't think that it would be a very big departure from the way things are operating now, really, in terms of how people work. To go to a single business constituency, we were struck, and many of our interviews were struck by the effectiveness of cross-constituency work between the business, the IP and the ISB constituencies already. So we'd hope that that would be a relatively straightforward process for an integrated business constituency to operate. And obviously there would be a capability, especially if the membership of constituencies grows, to articulate the substructures within constituencies so as to attract the maximum participation involvement and make sure that you're covering all the interests. And one of the things about the new integrated business constituency, it would be a very flexible structure that would be able to respond to differing business interests over time and would be able to incorporate those. On the registration constituency, we've had a discussion with the registries in another phone conversation, and Ken was saying that it would be very difficult for registries and registrars to work together, and there was some evidence of that from this phone conversation. Our view is that over the next, span of years, there will be likely to be developments in the way in which registries and registrars operate, and that it would be helpful to have a single registration constituency within which you would obviously need to have a sort of representation of the registries, particularly since they're a smaller group. It might be that if it was completely infeasible to get to move on that line, you might have to perhaps go for an even number of seats for the registries and registrars each to have. But the important thing would be, to see really if, after full-hearted discussion, if you like, there wasn't some way of the registration interests being able to, work together in a relatively constructive way.
Maybe also we had a point from Marilyn about the recommendation to or an advantage of flowing from less constituencies, which would be a smaller council, and you had some discussion on that on the last call as well, I think.
Well, I've already mentioned in my earlier response the importance of possibly moving away from the slightly vote-based legislative mode of operating that GNSO Council has tended to have. And we make really a whole set of recommendations, which are not in this principle four, but are elsewhere, that are designed to help the council to be an effective body. So we're really suggesting a more effective body. It's obviously very effective already, but to process the volume of business effectively, we'd suggest that using more task forces with a smaller representation of council members on the task forces and more involvement of outside experts. We suggest the concentration on face-to-face meetings for the council because, there's ample evidence that it's very difficult for people to sort of deliberate flexibly in, teleconference calls and positions where they can't really interact face-to-face. We're suggesting support for people to, be able to get to the face-to-face meetings as well. And we're suggesting, a slightly smaller number of councillors, reduction from 21 to 16, would be helpful in enhancing the quality of GNSO deliberations. But also, things like having a relatively hard-to-reach consensus level does have the effect of everybody recognizing from the word go that they are going to have to deal flexibly with other groups, that they can't really just sort of make progress, that they will end up in a locked decision if they just go forward with a kind of stand-pat constituency position. So we'd hope that those things taken as a whole would have positive effects on the ability of GNSS Council to reach, you know, a good level of consensus. So the 75% is not a particularly high level of consensus to reach. And most other organizations, I think, doing the kind of work that GNSS Council is doing, do try to reach a relatively high level of consensus. And we think that the whole package of measures would help to do that.
Mm-hmm. Philip, I have a follow-up. It's Marilyn, that's directly related to this topic. Can I ask it?
Okay.
Who else
has a follow-up on the same string?
Yeah, Jim Baskin, I have a follow-up on that as well.
George also?
As do I, Kim Stubbstone.
And Marilyn. That's four follow-ups I've heard. Take them in the same order as the original questioners. So, Jim, off you go.
Okay, thanks. I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to make it into a five-word question, but this consensus thing still bothers me because if you go with the sort of 16 members of the GNSO Council, and it's a lot different than if you have 100 or 1,000 people trying to reach consensus where they're all really unrelated or they have their own ideas. But when you have constituencies represented within the council and you're suggesting, for instance, 5 members for the registration group and 5 members for the business group and 3 for civil society, etc., those people generally are going to come in being told by their constituents how they should vote. And so you are going to have blocks. You're going to have 5 votes for the registration, all voting the same way. You're going to have 5 votes from business, all voting the same way. That means that either of those 2 large constituencies can veto anything that they don't like. And therefore, there will be no output from the GNSO, and I'm concerned that with no output from the GNSO, then ICANN has to work in much more of a vacuum, and GNSO can't do the job it's supposed to do.
Okay, thank you. Mara.
I wanted to find out, you know, what his thought was on that potential problem.
Mm-hmm. Marlon.
My question goes in a related area. Recognizing that ICANN is, by its bylaws, required to be a bottom-up, consensus-based, I use that term generally here, I recognize a number of the improvements you suggested. My question is, why, given that the GNSO and its constituencies, supported by the board, rejected the change in the size of the council that LSC is proposing, why wouldn't we just improve the present size, leave the size as it is, but make the improvements suggested, or some of the improvements suggested, improving expert advice, improving the quality and the number of staff, improving the support for face-to-face meetings, and because the volume of policy work is growing, yet LSC seems to be thinking that we can basically take people who have jobs and dedicate them to being policy wonks on the council. And I don't see the logic of that. I see the logic of the improvements, but I don't see changing the size of the council as an improvement. And I wanted to understand more about the logic.
George. This goes to the first question, how about the cross-constituency interaction. You mentioned that the IBC, the business constituency, and the ISPs have worked together. What processes do we put in place to encourage that between the registries, registrars, and a civil society? Should that be done at an early stage? Because if you leave it to the council stage, the positions might be entrenched already. And as the first question mentioned, you know, once you have those blocks ready, there's not going to be a lot of movement. How do you encourage that earlier in the process?
Yeah. And Ken?
Yeah, mine is not a question, it's rather just a clarification. I believe that you indicated in the comments that you made regarding your conversation with the registries, that the registries felt that it would not be possible for the registries and the registrar to effectively work together as a constituency. And I think what you need to know is that position was also deliberated to a great extent with a significant number of registrars. And the position that we received from the people that we talked to there was consistent with the one that we presented as well. The registrar constituency on the call to refute what I had indicated there.
Hi, this is John Nevitt from the registrar constituency, and I wouldn't characterize it that we don't feel like we could work with the registries, but it's I think there's differing interests, and it would be difficult to, especially between when you're talking about the difference in size of the members of the various of the two constituencies. I think that it would be extraordinarily difficult, considering the different size and the different interests, to be combined into one constituency.
Okay, John, thanks for that clarification as well. Patrick, over to you then on those 3 points.
Yes. Okay, well, going back to Jim's point, I mean, in any organization, you have really, when you're thinking about voting, if you're going to have voting, you have really two big endpoints. The first of these is, you know, majority rule, which is good for getting things done, but risky for people in terms of, you know, there could be a 51% majority against them. On the other hand, if you go to the other extreme, which is 100%, then you become vulnerable to possible holdouts by people who can sort of blackmail everybody else and withhold their consent. And so, again, you may not be able to progress. So I think when organizations go for an intermediate rule, like the 67% rule, the current 67% rule, they are looking for a sort of trade-off between these 2 points. On the one hand, you know, get a lot of things done, but also run the risk of having, you know, just narrow majority policies with 51%, or with 100% get nothing done because of holdouts. So we think that logic applies to GNSO also, and we agree with the, you know, the concept behind the 67% rule. So we're not really making a very large-scale proposition to change. We're just suggesting that at the moment, because of the balance of the different interests, the numbers involved, and because of the presence of weighted voting, it is there's a sort of a temptation for big blocks, like on the one hand the sort of supply side registration actors, or on the other hand the integrated the three business constituencies. There's a slight tendency, which a lot of people have pointed out to us, for people to sort of hope that they can swing some of the remaining council members and then get to the consensus level without actually having to make the concessions or do the deliberations and convince opposing groups of the rightness of the overall suggestion that they've got. So that's really what we're saying. Is it's not, if you're going to go for an intermediate level of voting between 50% and 100%, we're saying that the current level is just a little bit non-functioning, and that the somewhat higher level, actually, where the main blocks or potential blocks who might oppose each other recognize that they can't get any positive action at all unless they can convince the other side, and unless it's possible to reach a genuine consensus. That, if you know that from the start, then if you want to have positive action, then of course you will have to make some concessions. So we think that the, you know, in theoretical terms, we could, you know, we could set out this analysis for you guys if you want to get involved in the elaborate intricacies of, you know, political science, power indices, and how much change there is. But it's a very small change in the likelihood of GNSO reaching a decision.
This is Jim Bethany. I'd like to get back in the queue again.
Okay, Jim, that's noted. Patrick, just finish off with on the other point.
If I could just sort of skip over to George's point, which I apologize for not having picked up on before. I do agree very much that, you know, having people from different constituencies talking with each other from the earliest times is a very idea. And actually, what we suggest in the report is that it's quite difficult at the moment for people from one constituency to understand how other constituencies operate. And that's really, again, part of the rationale for suggesting, you know, fewer constituencies and somewhat more standardized modes of operating and somewhat more transparency in how they operate, reporting, for example, how many people are involved in participation. All of that will tend, I think, taken together, to help people in different constituencies to understand how other constituencies work, to recognize the legitimacy of the concerns and the interests that are being represented by the other constituencies, and to engage with them in a positive way. But we do also think that, some of the other recommendations, sort of smaller recommendations about the constituencies working together on other issues, for example, in terms of expanding their reach, their ability to reach different parts of the internet community, doing outreach work, learning from each other, and possibly discussing with the ICANN Center ways in which they operate. So there might be, you know, sort of lots of more joint working between the constituencies, and that would be incredibly helpful for, you know, the effective operations of GNSS Council and deliberations and improving the quality of deliberation. I very much agree with his point. On Marilyn's question, the volume of policy work is growing, but we are certainly not suggesting that GNSO council members should do more. We're suggesting that in a way that they should do less. So we're suggesting that there needs to be a reallocation of workload, really, between the council members who have tended to sit on all the council phone calls. There tended to be a lot of phone calls. There tended to be quite a lot of voting going on in phone calls.
Hi, it's Philip. I just got disconnected for a second. Sorry.
There's tended to be a slightly unpredictable way in which issues get raised. There hasn't been the kind of two-year plan that we're suggesting, which would mean that people have kind of assurance about how timetables are going to operate. So it's been rather a slightly obsessional thing to be a GNSO council member. You tend to be very alert and very active all the time in order to, you know, best represent the interests that you are seeking to represent. So that's been a little bit leading to sort of some overcommitment, I think, perhaps. And what we're suggesting really is, you know, it's not essential for task forces to be dominated by GNSO council members. There shouldn't really be even about half of the task forces who are GNSO council members. There should be more use of a wider range of expertise within the internet community. There should be an ability, you know, for experts to be brought into task forces, for task forces to work in a more focused way, perhaps to sort of take a week and really try and crack a problem. There should be more use of expertise within the staff. There should be some commissioning of expert reports on really difficult issues. There's an awful lot that can be done to reduce the workload on GNSO council members. And then all of that would lead up to, you know, focusing on having very well-briefed, well-supported GNSO council members who are meeting in a predictable way with clear agendas and a good plan of where they were going in terms of workload, where they, you know, you wouldn't be able to sort of bounce things past other groups. You would have to get genuine agreement in order to move forward. And all of that, we think, would help produce much better quality of GNSO deliberations and, a genuinely speedier and more effective method of working.
Okay, thanks so much. I have to, as moderator, leave the call in a couple of minutes, but I'm detecting continued interest and good participation still. Ken, you're still with us. Ken Stubb, you still with us?
Yes.
Yeah. Ken, could I ask you to take over the moderation? Well, I was going to suggest moving on, now we've covered the two of the media principles, is just to take a sort of open session in terms of questions on any areas not so far covered, as some of the areas around principle three to do a better website, I think, are areas where there's great commonality, so we don't need to cover those in quite the same sort of detail. Would that be right for me to hand over the mantle as moderator to you?
Yeah, I'm going to be jumping off the call in about 15 minutes because I have another conference call I need to prepare for, and if we're still on at that point in time, I'll ask either Alistair or Marilyn if they wouldn't mind stepping in at that point in time.
That sounds fine to me. I think it's a relatively straightforward task here. So thank you very much, everybody, for attending. Sorry I can't be with you for any longer now. Ken, thank over to you.
Thank you, Philip. I hope you can all hear me clearly. If not, I'll turn it over to Alistair or Marilyn right now. First of all, is there any more follow-up on the comments that we just had?
Yes, this is Jim Baskin. I already asked to be in the queue for that.
I'm sorry, Jim. I didn't have a queue going, so
no, I know.
Please go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm still not sensing that we're talking completely about the same issue when we talk about the 75% requirement for consensus. The response I keep hearing is that the groups that are at odds with each other will have to come to some compromise in order to accomplish something, and that doesn't always run true, because if one of the groups benefits from a lack of consensus or benefits from the status quo, then they really don't have any motivation to compromise. So I'm really concerned that what we're talking about with this 75% is the possibility of one of five votes being able to block any kind of progress from the GNSO, and thereby leaving all decisions up to the board of directors of ICANN with no input from the GNSO, no official input.
George here, I'd like to input on that. May I go ahead, or?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I was wondering whether that consensus can be achieved by bundling multiple issues into one super issue. For example, if you had WLS, people might not be able to form any consensus on that, but if you tied it together with some other issue, like WHOIS, for example, you might be able to reach that 75 threshold and compromise if the two are bundled together somehow.
You mean like?
Well, those are bad examples, but.
like pork barrel stuff in the U.S. Government?
Well, we don't want to get abused like that, but.
Well, I mean,
you're forcing people
to vote yes on something they don't like in order to get something they do like.
That's the nature of compromise, but.
Oh, but if you tie things together that aren't really related, well, I'm sorry, I'm getting into a debate when we're that's not the purpose of today's call, so.
But I think that debate is exactly how organizations work. I mean, it is certainly the case that you know, one of the things you need to worry about with sort of moving towards a 100% rule is that it can be overly favorable for people who have a interest in the status quo. But I think that the people who have this interest in the status quo would also, as Jim's original comment suggests, also would have to recognize that there were costs involved for GNSO Council and for their role within GNSO Council if agreement cannot be reached. So that if agreement cannot be reached, then GNSO Council will presumably have to, as I think one participant earlier on has suggested, just sort of condense the constituency views and then send those up, and then ICANN board will make decisions based on their own judgment of the positions being taken. So there are usually costs for not reaching agreement, and obviously you know what you'd want to do is have a set of arrangements that creates incentive to reach the maximum amount of agreement
What is the
where everybody would know that their interests were being protected.
What's the cost again to the constituency that doesn't want to see action?
Well, the cost is that they have an important role within the GNSO Council. This issue is bid up from the Council to the Board without GNSO Council reaching a position. Then, unless the constituency also has, you know, book control of the Board, they've lost their influence on the issue.
If the status quo, the way that the Board happens to act without any input from the GNSO, it favors one group over another in their mind, then they don't have any incentive to have anything go from the GNSO up to the Board.
If a constituency is so powerful that they, you know, that they control the Board, then they would want to not have a GNSO Council decision. That's absolutely right. But then if a constituency controls the Board, you know, they're going to get their way anywhere, I think, more or less. But I just don't see that moving from 67 to 75%, which is a very small movement, and which actually makes, as I say, on any technical analysis you do, it makes very little. It does make some difference. It does make it somewhat slightly, very, very slightly harder to reach a decision.
It's a huge difference, because it's the difference between one constituency voting no as a block, defeating everything, or having one constituency not be able to defeat everything, and that other constituencies, if they can get together, can make it happen.
This is Ken Stokes. Can I make an observation here? I think you're talking as if this is an all or nothing. The principal responsibility of the council is to provide advice and bring policy that a policy that would come up to the Board has less than what we define as a supermajority does not necessarily mean cannot accept the advice. As a matter of fact, the Board is not obligated to accept the policy anyway unless a very high percentage of the Board members vote against accepting the policy. So, I mean, we're making it sound like all or nothing. If the council sent a policy recommendation to the Board with a 71% approval, it would be very hard-pressed for the Board to know something like that. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like the Board literally
you're breaking
door
up.
Anything that came up. I'm sorry.
You're breaking up so badly, I can't understand you.
Okay, well, I apologize, but I was trying to say...
This is Caroline. I think it kind of brings up Mike Pelage's point about, you know, the importance of voting in your comment, Ken, about getting at least positions so that ICANN can then make an educated decision, you know, with or without consensus.
That's correct, Caroline. Listen, I'm going to ask someone else to step in. I'm having problems with this phone here. And I also have to call in. So if Alistair, are you still there? Or Marilyn? Do you
I'm here, Ken. I'm happy to take over.
I really appreciate it.
I think we're moving into a discussion rather than questions. So could I take a cue, please, for questions?
It's Marilyn, Alistair. Just to tell you I'm back. I just stepped away for about 10 minutes, but I've just returned, and I'm just noting that.
Okay. Do I have anybody who has a question?
George.
George? Anybody else? Okay, go ahead, George.
This goes to recommendation 11 about the chair being more visible within ICANN and to carry more institutional weight. ICANN itself does a very good job of public relations. They have internal and external through, I think, the Edelman firm. Do you think that the GNSO needs something like that to increase its publicity, both within ICANN and to the wider community about issues?
Yes. I mean, our view is very much that we were quite struck when we went around and about talking with, you know, very elite and well-informed people, how many of them said to us that they didn't really know very much about how GNS operates, including, you know, people on the board and people in very senior positions elsewhere in the ICANN structure. And our general view is that GNSO's role and prominence within ICANN needs to be somewhat enhanced, and that an easy and useful way for that to happen is for the GNSO chair, who already is playing a very key role, which I think is recognized by people, you know, at the very top of ICANN as a very key role, for their position, really, his or her position, to be somewhat more institutionally recognized. And we're also concerned, if you like, that that there's a sort of a bit of a disconnect between GNSO Council and the board, in the sense that board members are elected, but they then do not operate as sort of delegates of GNSO. They operate in the general interest of the board. They're not on the GNSO Council anymore. So that there's not a, you know, as strong a link as there might be between GNSO and the board. And there needs to be improved communication, and one way for that might be for the GNSO Council Chair to sit in as a liaison on the board, or for the GNSO Council Chair to automatically become a board member for 2 months after serving as chair. Or any of these sorts of links, and a number of other possibilities were raised, interesting ones, in the registry's conversation as well. But, you know, what really does need to happen is that the very important role of the GNSO chair needs to be more institutionally recognized with ICANN. The links between GNSO Council and the board need to be strengthened. The links between the GNSO Council Chair, who's one of the key policymakers within ICANN, and Chair of the Board and the President of ICANN, all those sorts of things need to be somewhat more formalized. And there might be a range of different ways which we set out in the report in which that could be done. It's very difficult to do because the GNSO Council Chair is already a very busy person, and this would tend to add somewhat to their workload, but we do think that it would be a positive thing for GNSO Council, and it would enhance its visibility and its influence more broadly within ICANN.
Alistair, it's Meryl, and I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead, Meryl.
Patrick, I happen to be familiar with the ITU, with the IETF, and with W3C, the WiMAX Forum, and a number of other quasi-standards, quasi-policy bodies. And I'm interested in your comments that ICANN isn't visible enough. The reality is that the only people who know what the ITU does are the parts of the government that are associated with ICTs. Same thing is true for the technical experts. The ITU may have a brand name, but really its functions aren't understood except for the technical experts and government regulatory entities that it's involved with. Same thing really true about the functions of the IETF. The average domain user or registrant doesn't know what the IETF does, or even the average web user doesn't necessarily know what W3C does. So, it seemed to me that one thing that you guys were doing, and I was interested in this, is you were equating that you were identifying a need for almost a broad set of users, not necessarily the technical experts, and I use the term technical broadly, but just users to know more about what ICANN does. And that I'm not sure I understood the logic of that, given the fact that ICANN's mission is supposed to be narrow and focused. That's one question. The second question is whether you looked at the other two supporting organizations for how they manage themselves, and whether you gave consideration to the need for an executive committee across the three supporting organizations, or an executive committee within the GNSO?
Okay, Patrick, do you want to respond, please?
Yes, I'd just like to stress that the suggestion about the GNSO chair being more visible is really about strengthening the visibility of GNSO within ICANN and the internet community and people who are involved already with ICANN. It's not part and parcel of broadening GNSO's visibility to the internet community as a whole. On Marilyn's question, we of course didn't make any recommendations about enhancing ICANN's visibility, except in relation to the ICANN website, which is also the GNSO website, and where we have drawn attention to a number of problems about that, which would probably mean that there needs to be improvements in the overall operation of the ICANN website. And I think it would be pretty universally agreed, it was by the people who spoke to us in our interviews, that for an internet-based body like ICANN, it is very important that the website is very fully visible and is conforms to best practice and is easy to navigate. And so on. And we make recommendations about that, and we make recommendations for obviously the GNSO part of the ICANN website as well as the website as a whole. But with that significant exception, we haven't made any comments at all about enhancing ICANN's visibility. And in fact, if you look at our report, you'll see some detailed data which shows that ICANN's visibility is already very high. What's not so high is GNSO's visibility within that broader ICANN.
Now, Patrick, I understood that, but so maybe I should use the analogy of the T sector within the ITU. My point was really, given that ICANN is supposed to be more of a technical body with a narrow mission focused in a particular area, I was interested in whether you were trying to drive toward very broad and very general visibility and awareness, or deepening and strengthening awareness and visibility within those people who I don't want to use the term suitable, that's not my term here, but within the people who really would have an interest in participating in policy making about, and the work associated with policy making, or if you were driving toward participation and awareness on a, just a general average internet user population?
Well, we certainly didn't make any position at all about ICANN's visibility vis-a-vis general average internet user. And, of course, we didn't study ICANN as a whole. We only looked at GNSO.
I'm sorry, but what I'm saying is for the GNSO's visibility.
Right. Well, I think that, our terms of reference were very clear to look at the representativeness and transparency, and that's what we focused on in the study. So it's not that these are sort of obsessions of ours. This is what we were asked to investigate, and that's what we did. And we were asked to investigate them, obviously, because they are embodied in ICANN's bylaws and set up. I think if you're suggesting that ICANN is that GNSO is really a sort of narrowly elite body, and that it's very technical and so forth, then I think you'd perhaps need to sort of launch a movement to rewrite the ICANN bylaws so that the current emphasis on representative and transparency wasn't there. But at the moment, that's the way things were set up. Obviously, other bodies are set up in completely different ways from ICANN in that way. But I think most people would think that one of the foundations of ICANN's legitimacy and credibility has been the bottom-up stakeholder involvement aspect.
and that's a very strong reason why ICANN is very widely supported by countries and interests across the world, because they believe that that's valuable. So anyway, we were operating within the established ICANN setup and the established terms of reference that were given to us.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. Do I have any other questions that people would like to ask?
Alistair, it's Meryl, and I'm gonna make a follow-up clarification, because I think Patrick is actually not understanding my point, and given we're transcribing this, I think that's probably not helpful to either side here.
Just Marilyn, I mean, I just want to make sure that we're also giving the opportunity for others
right.
to ask questions.
Right, and,
well,
and I don't
so.
Need to do that now. I just wanted to say that I probably need to do that later.
Okay, sure. Is there anybody else who has any questions at this time? Okay, Marilyn, go ahead.
Patrick, I'm very familiar with ICANN's bylaws. My point that I think I'm miscommunicating my question. Within the scope of those bylaws, we have, most of us know, we have the mission and the core values, but ICANN has a narrow mandate to focus on the unique indicators. So with that as the kind of parameter here, my question was, were you, from the GNSO perspective, thinking that we needed to be visible outside of the population of people who are interested in making policy and understanding policy about the unique indicators? Maybe that's a little clearer.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, we certainly weren't being in any way prescriptive, and as if you look at our report and you look, for example, at the ways in which we looked at the representativeness of the business constituency, the intellectual property constituency, and so on, we obviously recognize that a very important factor is that, you know, not everybody out there in the world is interested in domain name issues. And, in fact, it's a relatively restricted group of interests and people who are interested in the kind of issues that GNSO is handling. And, therefore, it is very important to contextualize any judgments you make about representativeness, you know, by looking, you know, very carefully to see who those people are and who those interests are. And so that's why the report, you know, doesn't do any kind of crude, there are this many businesses in the world and only X percent of them join GNSO constituencies or anything like that. So, you know, we recognize that GNSO has a very specific and, you know, relatively esoteric remit that only a certain proportion of actors and interests will want to be involved with this. But it is very important that the setup and the arrangements that are in place attract as many of those actors and interests as it's possible to attract, and are not seen as off-putting by those actors and interests. It's also very important that if conditions change, an issue arises, some new actors or interests who previously weren't concerned now want to get involved, how easy or effective would they find the setup? How easy would the how would they be able to, you know, make their voices heard, and so on? So those sorts of issues are really what the report is focusing on.
Thank you.
Do I have any other questions for Patrick? Patrick, I have one in relation to representativeness. Well, I think
yeah.
Two. Firstly, did you consider the implications for global representativeness of council members from reducing the number of council members? And secondly, as somebody who lives in a part of the world where it takes a day to get to any meeting elsewhere in the world,
your suggestion for more face-to-face meetings, I can understand sort of the psychological reasons for that, the relationship sort of reasons for that, but in terms of, certainly from my own perspective, going to Europe requires 2 days just to get there and get back. Did you consider those sorts of implications in that recommendation?
Oh. Well, obviously those are very important issues. I think that the global representativeness issue was raised with us by a large number of people, and there was a concern about a sort of perceived dominance of sort of English-speaking people somewhat. Obviously, the current structure does allow, you know, the various constituencies to have one member each from, you know, the three main regions, North America, Europe, and Asia-Pacific. But our suggestion of moving to larger constituencies with, you know, more representatives from each constituency would we think, be perfectly consistent with maintaining that global representation. Difficulties of travel, obviously, it's very important that that GNSO Council activities are structured in such a way that the overall workload and commitment involved in the council, being a council member, is not so crippling as to put everybody off from wanting to do it. And at the moment, there are a whole range of factors that were raised with us by many different people, including, for example, the fact that apart from the members who are sitting for the nominating from the nominating committee, nobody else is being paid to have expenses or accommodation. And we think that you know, GNSO is such an important and key policy-making body within ICANN that it does make sense to move towards paying expenses. But what we're suggesting when we say move to more face-to-face, rely more on face-to-face meetings, is not necessarily an expansion of the existing amount of face-to-face meeting time, but in tandem with all the other suggestions that we're making, you know, really making good use of the time that GNSO council members have together. So more pre-preparation of issues using staff, using consultants and other expertise, more use of task forces. All of these are designed to help make sure that when council meetings are taking place, they're properly prepared for, there's a good plan of work. The council meeting is going to progress in an effective way. It's worth people's while going, and it's easier for people to attend because they're not picking up all the costs themselves. So we think, you know, if you take that whole package of measures together, although it is obviously always tricky, you will be having council meetings sort of more around the three ICANN conferences anyway, and these do vary around the world. So we don't think that the overall impact of our recommendations would be adverse to maintaining effective global representation. I hope it would be conducive to doing that.
Okay, thank you. I see that we're basically at our 2 hours. So thank you very much, Patrick, for responding to everybody's questions, and thank you, everybody, for participating in this call. I think we'll have to pull it to a close. So thank you, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Have a nice weekend, everybody.
Sorry, George, did you have a question?
Oh, no, just saying have a nice weekend to everybody.
Oh, sorry, thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye.